Ways and Means. Today is June 3rd. We have three public hearings scheduled for today. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2021 relating to oral health. We are starting with testimony from a couple of our colleagues, legislators, representatives. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Alyssa Kennegeier from House District 46, parts of Southeast and Northeast Portland. Really honored today to introduce House Bill 2021, a dental pilot in the schools. And I just want to give you a little bit of the genesis of this bill and then turn it over to my good colleague who I've worked with very closely on this. As a member of the Northwest Health Foundation, oral health is one of our three top priorities. And about 2 years ago, as many of you know, there was a big community water fluoridation debate in Portland. And the people who did not want community water fluoridation won. But one of the things, one of the unique things that happened after that debate was the two sides got together and said, how can we work together to make sure that we do address some of the problems with dental caries that are really pronounced in Oregon. And so I started working on legislation with Kelly Barnes, who was one of the people that really put this and other dental concepts forward. She worked on the City Club report that was generated after that debate on the community water fluoridation. And using some of the statistics that they found in the City Club report, as well as the statewide oral, I can't remember the exact name of it, but the statewide oral health strategy plan, we came up with many different stakeholders at the table, came up with different legislative concepts. So this is one of them, and it started out as a pilot for fluoride varnish because the state has already prioritized in its metrics the sealants, but sealants cannot be put on kids until the first molars have erupted, and usually around first or second grade. And so one of the ways that this bill started was to have a dental pilot in the schools that allowed, with of course an opt-out, a fluoride varnish to be put on. And some of the best practices are that, and it can be done very cheaply, twice a year. It can really protect kids. Then, when I heard in November that Representative Hayden was elected and I heard that he was a dentist, I invited him into this conversation. And he said, you know, that's great, twice a year fluoride varnish, but what we really need to do is make sure that kids on a daily basis learn how to really take care of their teeth. And so I'm going to pass it over at this point because he became the chief sponsor of the bill. I came into the second position. We've worked very, very closely on this bill and several, and I'm enormously excited that he's joined the legislature and that we've worked so closely on these bills.
Thank you. Thank you, Kenny Geyer. My name is Cedric Hayden, State Representative, House District 7. Thank you for the opportunity to come testify before your committee today. So House Bill 2021 is a bill that I think is important to continue the conversation for probably obvious reasons. I've been asked to engage in quite a few dental bills and have written some myself here. And just the general scope of it is the state spends tens of millions and actually hundreds of million dollars on a restorative or reparative oral health system in the state of Oregon, and these are all preventable with very few exceptions diseases. Oral health is a preventable disease, and if we look at the dollars that we spend on education and prevention, it is very small compared to what we spend on prevention. I've spent over 21 years of my life professionally restoring teeth, and the honest truth to that is that's a failed outcome if we could get in front of that. So that's kind of the background of why I support this bill. This is a pilot project. We originally started out with wanting 800 students involved with it just so we could have an N number or get some data on it that was large enough that we can draw some assumptions off. We have not put a number in this bill specifically. The intent was to engage with two or three rural schools that were accepting of us to come in or to have this pilot project come in, the oral health people come in, and kind of set set up what this means. What is education? A good example is when I came to the state legislature, I got my little office up there, 379, and every day I go to the bathroom where there's a sink because I don't have one in my office, and I brush my teeth. I have noticed over the last few months, everybody along my hallway is starting to brush their teeth. And so it's something that isn't expensive. It's kind of an example. I grew up in a public health dental family, an example of me personally. Even though I'm a dentist, I've never had a tooth filled. So I've never experienced an actual filling. That's because my father was a dentist, and daily brushing was something that was ingrained to us from a very small age. My six-year-old son has yet to get a cavity, and last night we pulled his first primary tooth. Exciting time. So really what this bill wants to do is to go into two or three small schools. I have engaged with three small schools already that are excited about the project to have, and we believe it's possible to use a vehicle of a nonprofit to kind of come in and set it up and show what daily flossing is, what daily brushing is, and then to just get the school a little bit of time, maybe 15 minutes a day after lunch, where the students could do that activity. We're not looking to create a big cost and twice a year to provide fluoride to them. The fiscal on it is a couple hundred thousand dollars. I was surprised at how high that was. I think they're assuming that all that education would rely directly on the educational system or the Board of Education for the schools to train teachers to do the training. The pilot project is really not intended to do that. The pilot project is intended to have nonprofit organization come in, set that up, and then have the ongoing 5 to 15 minute time slot after lunch for these children to get exposed to a toothbrush. As a dentist working in this arena in Oregon for 20 years, you would be probably surprised how many children don't even have a toothbrush, don't have access to a toothbrush. It isn't something that can be bought on the Oregon Trail card, even though it would be possible with a waiver. They can't buy toiletries with their SNAP benefit. A toothbrush might be something for the poverty population that we would like to do that. So we're looking to provide children with the access to a toothbrush either in school, maybe in food boxes in the future. But this would be a way that we could go in and screen approximately 800 students, get information as the students enter school, how many of them have active oral health concerns, how many of them don't, and then hopefully continue this project long enough to where we could look at the population in 2 or 3 years compared to the new population coming in and seeing if we're making a difference. So that's the be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Hayden, I have two questions. Just want to get this straight. Because of current federal regulations on the way food benefits are distributed, someone can buy soda pop and packaged cookies, but not a toothbrush.
That is correct, and I have actually worked on that, and there is a possible way, if there's the will to do it, to get a waiver that some of those benefits can be adjusted, and a toothbrush and toothpaste could be added to that. So, future.
Thank you. I'm glad that we revealed that again in a public hearing. My second question is, I really have no idea what family traditions you might have, but has a tooth fairy visited your house?
The tooth fairy came last night, and it was an exciting time. Unfortunately, I get up at 5:30 in the morning, so I wasn't there to experience that part of it because I drive home every night. But yes, the tooth fairy came last night.
That's pretty cool.
I just wanted to add one thing about the pilot. You know, obviously our hope is that this would turn into something that the Department of Education would promote in its schools across the state. And so part of this is finding out what the barriers are. You know, he's very optimistic that they could do everyday toothbrushing. And I'm thinking, okay, for 2 minutes of toothbrush, you know, can you really get all the kids in the school? And so it might be that given the real barriers in the school, it might be that you have to take 20% of the school and do it once a week, but encourage them to do it every day. We don't know really what the barriers are, but that is what this pilot is going to be. You know, what is it, the training that teachers need to be able to instill this kind of daily habit in kids, and what are the kind of facilities that are needed? There is some money in the budget for materials, which are toothbrushes and floss, but that is the intent of this bill. I think it's incredibly exciting. I'm really glad that he came along and added that piece to it beyond the twice a year fluoride varnish for those who want it.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Yes, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Representative Hayden and Representative Kenegar, I was kind of surprised at that fiscal too. So what I'm wondering is if you worked with local dentists to come in and do these tutorials or whatever. And I know that a lot of them would, because they would be excited to help instill these kinds of habits early on in life, because I know my dentist is often asked to do stuff like that after the fact, you know, after a whole mouthful of problems, and it's not always maintained, put it that way. And I can't speak for her, but I bet she would be happy to do that. And there's how many dentists in that area. I don't know what schools you're talking about, but the same thing with the cost of things. I mean, ask the parents to do that, put a little skin in the game and, you know, provide a toothpaste and toothbrush and floss for their child, each child. And I bet you there'd be, you know, Representative Kenegar, if it took more than 15 minutes or whatever it was to brush, that should be just what it takes, you know. And they do it in groups or something, I don't know. You know, they have those sinks that are around.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's part of, you know, what this is. And I think the other exciting thing is, you know, when he came in and started, you know, thinking about this daily brushing, and I had started out with what I thought was a more modest idea. I thought, oh, you know, the teachers just hate unfunded mandates. But he's had great communication with those schools, and they're very eager to do it. And so that's why I think this is such an exciting pilot, to have schools that are eager to do it, a legislator that's eager to really stay involved in the process. So it turned it into a much better bill.
Really, thank you. And I just think that local dentists would be happy to donate. They give us their patients new toothbrush every time you go, and toothpaste. They'd be happy to donate that.
Yes, thank you. The schools that I've been communicating with are ones that are close to my home, because it's easy for me to get there. We've met with three local schools within a 30-mile radius of my home. They're rural schools, because that's where I live. They're excited about the possibility. As far as getting dental supplies, and I am meeting with the OHA at 9:30 this morning to talk about that. As dentists and as nonprofit organizations, we have free access to toothpaste. The Crest will send us as many boxes as we want. We also have access to toothbrushes that would normally cost you about $3 in the store for 50 cents. And we can get as much floss as we want, basically just for asking. And so we believe that we can utilize those in this pilot project to keep our supplies down really low. And I know there was a calculation done from concern from the school. Well, it's going to take 2 minutes to brush every kid. I got 15, 20 kids in my class. That's going to take X amount of time. We're going to be spending 30 minutes a day on this, that kind of thing. The reality is, what we're trying to do is promote the concept of it being a social norm to brush your teeth, just like we've done here on the north side of third floor. It has become the social norm, whether that's peer pressure or guilt. But if you get kids doing that at a certain age, it will become routine, and that's the whole point of it. We want it to become routine. Pretty soon they'll be asking mom and dad for their toothbrush. They want to bring a toothbrush. They want to do this. Just get them in the habit of doing it, to have an environment in school where it's acceptable. When I first started brushing my teeth here, people were like, oh, you're brushing your teeth in the hallway. You know, just to have it acceptable.
Senator Bates.
Just real quick. I don't know where you got that. The physical on it, I calculated $250 per student, and that's ridiculous. Point I'd like to make is that some of the CCOs are starting these programs already, and they have funds for this. They need to form the relationships you're talking about, especially in our schools of low income. We have many of those kids who have never seen a toothbrush in their life. They're parents don't brush their teeth, the kids don't brush their teeth, and when they come into our offices and we examine them, we look at kids with a mouth full of cavities, and it's just horrible. And they literally have never seen a toothbrush in their life other than on TV. Mm-hmm. So I would ask that if you could focus first on those kids that really have nothing at home that drives them in the right direction, and let's talk about work with the CCOs and get them into the schools to start this program. As you said, we spend a lot of money. As you know, we're just putting out a new benefit for adults for restoration and dentures. It's much better to do preventative, obviously. So great program. We need to move it forward. I think the money should come out of the CCOs, frankly, and be supported inside the schools.
Representative Stark.
Thank you. Just wanted to add to this. You've probably already talked to them, but if you haven't, I'd encourage you to connect with a lot of the early learning centers, such as Head Start. To my understanding, they already do the brushing with the children and so forth. I don't know that they do the varnish. But as far as implementing at the elementary school level, there may be some procedures that are already developed that are in place at the younger years. So.
Yeah, we do currently work with Head Start program, and we'll continue to do that. This is a project that I would personally continue to be involved with. As far as engaging with the CCOs, yes, that's correct. They do have funds available for that, and so on the fiscal side, I actually think we could get this done without additional state money. As far as the schools that we've talked to directly, those three schools have a population that 80% of their children have the free lunch program, which means that they qualify for that, which is pretty high. So these are schools in areas with poverty where the parents either don't have the funds or the education to provide that toothbrush.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to say on the fiscal, we both thought that we could get the fiscal way down. We started a conversation with LFO to find out what the breakdown was, and Representative Hayden is going to follow up at 9:30 today. My concern about not putting any money in the bill is that we're basically asking the CCO to do something, and I'm not sure if we have the legislative authority to ask them to do something. This bill, the bulk of the money went to OHA to oversee, coordinate, collect data, things like that. We don't think we need as much OHA staffing as is put in the bill, but I think having a little bit of money and asking them to oversee this pilot ensures that it will happen. But I do think the idea of connecting with the CCOs is great, because that's how we should figure out how do you make that connection, and that's a great way to expand the pilot in the future.
Senator Steiner-Hayward. Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, your point, Representative Kenny Geyer, is well taken about not wanting to put too much money, but also not wanting to not put any money. One of my ongoing concerns as a legislator, and let me start by saying I think this is a great idea, all right? And I, as a family physician, you know, I'm right up there with you, Representative Hayden, about this whole issue of prevention, right? I mean, my watchword this session is an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And what I do have a concern about, and I hope that we can do with this project, is really track the outcomes well, right? Track these kids and see, I know it's hard to do, but we can track them through the school system or whatever, figure out which ones are getting cavities and which ones aren't, figure out which ones are getting in for timely dental care, so figure out some ways to link it. And, you know, in terms of the CCOs, they have a requirement to do community needs assessments, not just for the kids who are CCO beneficiaries, but for the whole community. And frankly, I don't think it's a, I mean, certainly kids in lower socioeconomic status are more at risk for poor oral health, but I would not guarantee you that kids in higher, I mean, you know this as well as I do, right? I mean, there's no guarantee that just because you have money, you take good care of your teeth. So I just want to point out that I think it's really important that we set up really good tracking systems in advance so that we can figure out if we're doing the right thing, so that when we go to say let's expand this, we have the rationale and the evidence to support it. That's just so important in all these projects.
I don't have any other names signed up to testify on House Bill 2021. Was there anyone else here today to testify? Thank you, both of you representatives.
Thank you.
For being here with us. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2021. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2796 relating to music therapy.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, House Bill 2796 authorizes the Health Licensing Office within the Oregon Health Authority to issue licenses to practice music therapy and specifies licensing criteria, allows the office to adopt by rule various details like licensing, qualifications, and fees. The fiscal is expected to be minimal. However, I did want to note that the agency may need to return to a rebalance for either staffing or expenditure limitation, depending on how many bills pass this session that do affect the office.
Thank you. Representative Parrish.
Good morning. For the record, Julie Parrish, House District 37, representing Westland and Tualatin, here today to bring you House Bill 2796. It's a pretty simple bill. In Oregon, we have two universities that offer music therapy. Currently, they are not licensed. When they come out and they receive their credential from the university, music therapy is an important part of a variety of issues that particularly a child might have. I've personally experienced with my own child, one who had sensory issues, and music therapy was a piece of that. We are now getting good grades this year in high school, pleased to say, and it took a couple years of a variety of different therapies to get him through some of those issues. The licensure piece, and normally I sort of bristle at requiring more licenses to do a job in Oregon, except in the case of some of our healthcare licenses, in order to engage with insurance companies, they really do need to have authority to practice, license to practice in our state so that they can bill insurance companies so that they can actually get paid for the work that they do. I've brought with me a constituent who is going to explain the bill a little bit better in terms of why they see the need, and I've got another committee I've got to get back to, so unless there's any questions of me, I do want to be able to hop back and say I do support the bill. The bill has a very minimal fiscal. It's other funds. It's not general fund as we see it right now. It would come from licensure, the same like we do with midwives and the nurses and everybody else who has a health license. Those dollars are not coming out of general fund. And you'll find that the music therapists who are here in the room today are very anxious to write their check to the state of Oregon so that they can expand their practices, and, which is very rare to say that people are excited or give us money, but I think that they've been waiting for a couple years to do this. We've been working on this bill for a couple sessions now. And I have to say, the health licensing, they will not be getting their own board. They'll be just working under the health licensing agency. Holly Mercer has been fantastic in helping this bill come together. I want to give kudos to her office for all the work that they've done to get this where it is today. So I hope that we get it moved and get it out the door, and I will turn it over. Unless you have questions for me, I will turn it over. I will say the dental thing's really easy to do from the last bill. You just give a kid a cup of water as they walk back in from lunch. They can do it at their desks. So as a mom with three kids who just had cavities, I appreciate the dental bill.
Representative Parrish, we have three people signed up to testify. I don't know if you've brought the people to the table with you.
A couple of them
are,
yes.
Signed up.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes, so.
All right. On the list.
Any questions on that? I'm going to head back to my committee.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks for being here.
Julie.
Thank you. We have three people signed up to testify. Lilith, Laura, and another name.
Jody.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Hi, I'm Lilith Grand. Nice job pronouncing my name, by the way. Thank you, co-chairs and committee members, for hearing our testimony today about this really important bill. In music therapy, what we do is we use music and the elements of music to help people achieve goals that actually typically usually have nothing to do with music. So we're addressing developmental, neurological, behavioral health goals. Using music. And my history, I've been a music therapist for 23 years, and I've worked in other states. When I was in California, I owned an agency and contracted with 11 different school districts to provide music therapy as a related service on individual IEPs for children with special needs. And that has never been done in the state of Oregon and cannot be done in the state of Oregon the way that we're currently set up. The State Department of Education does not recognize music therapy, and this bill would have the state recognize it. Even though we are recognized on a federal level, the United States Department of Education acknowledges music therapy and the validity of music therapy as a related service and has been provided in other states for over 40 years in that manner. So we're a little behind in Oregon when it comes to education using music therapy as a related service in the same way that physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy would be utilized. I've also worked at a children's hospital in another state, and currently there are no medical hospitals in the state of Oregon who provide music therapy. And I've been paid through Medicaid waiver in other states, and that also is not done in Oregon. This is a concern because there are people who are of vulnerable populations who really could utilize music therapy, and they don't have access to us unless they can pay for us privately. And that is a concern. Also, I am the Western Region of the American Music Therapy Association's representative to the AMTA Committee on Professional Advocacy. And I can tell you, of the 9 states in the Western Region, Oregon has the highest number of complaints for misrepresentation of the field of music therapy. And this is where someone is claiming to be a music therapist, and they have not had the training to do so. Or a facility, and we do have a major children's hospital who on their website claims to have music therapy, and they do not. They claim to have to offer music therapy as one of the services offered at their facility, and it's not being provided by a board-certified music therapist. And so that's definitely concerning, because someone who has not had the training can actually cause harm. And we'd be happy to provide you with examples of what that would be. But in my imagination, this committee wants to know, why would the Oregon Health Plan want to pay for music therapy? Why would a school district want to pay for music therapy? So I have just a couple of examples for you from my career in other states. Working in a major children's hospital in another state, I would assist with PICC line placement, which is a minorly invasive procedure that typically with children they use sedation for in that procedure. To use sedation, the sedation would have to be administered by a nurse practitioner with another RN present. They would have to remain present throughout the procedure, and then the child would have to be monitored one-to-one by an RN for at least 4 years post 4 hours post-procedure. And if you don't use the sedation and you use music therapy instead, the child doesn't have the side effects from the medication. That's other RN staffing, which is much more expensive than a music therapist, is not needed, and the expensive medications are not needed. And if the child's getting a PICC line so that they can be discharged from the hospital, then they don't have to wait 4 to 6 hours for the drugs to wear off. They can go immediately home. On average, those children pain scaled when they got music therapy instead of sedation, on average a 1.6 on the 0 to 10 pain scale, 10 being the worst pain you can possibly imagine, 0 meaning no pain at all. Pinch me hard, it's a 2, you know? So, and they were smiling and laughing throughout their procedures. Mm. And said that they would get a PICC line again, no problem. Wow. Whereas children who got sedation said, no, it was a horrible experience. So that is a significant savings to a hospital and to an insurance company. Recently, I've worked with a 4-year-old who has some severe behavioral issues and emotional issues, and he's been kicked out of preschools and just really, really struggling, and was going to have a one-to-one aide if he had continued in this manner for kindergarten to be managed. And I've been working with him for about 8 months now, and because of music therapy, he's going to enter kindergarten without needing that one-to-one aide. That's a significant savings to a school district. When I lived in California, my business contracted with 11 school districts providing services on an IEP. Quite often, when traditional treatments and traditional educational methodologies are not effective. Music therapy can be. Music functions globally in the brain, and we're able to retrain things with a unique tool. And so we can often, relatively quickly, have a child meet some IEP objectives that they've been really struggling at, and then they don't need as much of the other things. Also in California, I worked with a foster care agency and an adoption agency, and I would get those children who were difficult to place and who had been kicked out of multiple foster placements. And we found that those children who received music therapy, those families that received music therapy, those children remained in those foster care families much longer, like significantly longer, more than three times, than in their previous homes. And those families that received music therapy were more likely to say yes to another difficult placement. So that's some of the benefits of music therapy. Those are not uncommon benefits of music therapy, and all of them do have fiscal impact. Thank you so much.
Lily, I have one question for you before
yeah.
we continue. You mentioned contracting with school districts.
Mm-hmm.
Contracted also with education service districts that provide services to individual school districts?
I did, yes, in California. Mm-hmm. It's done differently in California. Here in Oregon, educational school districts cannot hire a music therapist, cannot contract with a music therapist because we're not acknowledged by the State Department of Education. And so they, if they have some slush funds or extra funds, they could hire us as a supplemental service, but not as a part of an IEP, addressing IEP objectives directly.
Would certification, such as might come through this bill, change the status with the Oregon Department of
It would
Education?
Make it possible.
It would?
Yes. I'm told by the State Department that it would.
Okay. I want to make sure that we have noted that on our record.
Yeah, I'm actually told by the State Department that this is the only way that would happen.
Okay. Representative Boone, did you have a question?
Yeah, I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Lilith, which hospital it advertises they have music therapy but doesn't, in your opinion?
Dornbecker.
Okay. So they, follow up?
Sure.
So they advertise they have music therapy but they don't? I mean, I'm confused.
Yeah, what they have is a phenomenal, it's actually a really great program called Music RX that's provided by Children's Cancer Association. Children's Cancer Association pays musicians to go in and be Music RX practitioners. They are not music therapists. They have not undergone the training of the music therapy. And in many instances, those Music RX practitioners are placed very appropriately in public areas of the hospital for musical entertainment, and in many cases, in my opinion, they're placed very inappropriately with children who are in fragile states. They're dying, they're facing the fight of their life, they're in the NICU, they're in the PICU, and these musicians are going in, and without proper training, a well-meaning musician can very, very easily trigger something for a child that could actually cause harm.
Well, briefly, I want to make sure that we get to the end.
So I am, now you piqued my curiosity too, because I know of someone, and I know she works in hospice settings.
Mm-hmm.
And but what exactly are they doing wrong, or what if they were trained, what's in the training that makes it proper in those applications?
Really great question. So a music therapist is trained to recognize signs of an emotional trigger, stop what they're doing, and then help that patient deal with whatever that trigger was. A musician is not. and they wouldn't necessarily recognize. Would you like an example?
Yeah.
That might be. Yeah, that might be helpful. So, I have a couple of examples, but one easy one is a friend of mine was working in a bone marrow transplant unit, adult bone marrow transplant unit, and there was a volunteer harpist playing some beautiful music. And when he walked onto the unit, the social worker came up to him and said, "Oh, thank goodness you're here. We're scooping up souls today. I don't know what's going on, but everybody's depressed." And when you're fighting for your life and you're getting bone marrow transplant, what you need to do is have a positive attitude that actually has medical impact. If you're upset and ideating about death, then your medical outcomes are impacted by that. And it turned out that this harpist had been practicing for an upcoming concert and three times had played the theme to Schindler's List, mm-hmm. which is a beautiful piece of music and totally inappropriate for that setting. So that's one example.
Thank you.
Let's hear from the next.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Thank you, Chair Bates and members of the committee. My name is Laura Beer, and I started my music therapy journey 30 years ago. And I currently am the program director at Merrill Hurst University. So I'm here representing Merrill Hurst as well as Pacific University. We both offer undergraduate degrees in music therapy. And I'm happy to say Merrill Hurst is on track to offer a graduate degree. So I wanted to talk to you briefly about what the education and training is of a music therapist. So when someone enters a music therapy program, they study neurology, physiology, anatomy, psychology, counseling, ethics, and they also study the symptoms and disease of many different kinds of diseases and disabilities. And we are also trained professional musicians. So when a student comes into the program, they're introduced to music therapy, and within a year or two, they begin observing music therapists and working alongside music therapists. We're required to have almost 200 hours of clinical practicum work in the educational setting. And when a music therapist graduates from their program or they finish their coursework, we then have to undergo about 1,000 hours of a clinical internship that's supervised. And our journey doesn't end there. Once we fully graduate, we then have to sit for the national certification exam, which is administered by a separate licensing body, the certification board for music therapists. And our journey doesn't end there. We are required to take 100 hours of continuing education credits for recertification every 5 years. So the program, we undergo very intensive, comprehensive training to recognize physiological, emotional, spiritual, and physical disabilities and issues, and know how to meet people with music and become a member of a team. We don't prescribe, we don't diagnose, but we're team members that support the overall development and health of many, many different populations. We currently serve almost 100 different types of, music therapists can be found in almost 100 different types of clinical environments, from forensic settings to early childhood to long-term care facilities to neonatal units, private practice work, hospice settings. So we're here today to really emphasize that the training and education that we all have as music therapists is very unique. We're evidence-based profession as well. Research is a big part of what we study, what we learn to do, and we root our clinical practice in best practices gathered by comprehensive research. So we want to be able to ensure the integrity of our profession. We want to increase access to many different types of people in Oregon. And the other issue important to me as an educator is I want to be able to tell my students, please stay in this state. We have jobs for you. This will increase the ability of our students to go out and have jobs that are funded. And it would be, we have, I think it was 80% of the students that came into my program last year traveled from out of state, because we have very, very good programs here that are nationally recognized, and I'd like to be able to retain these people and have them engage as clinical supervisors and have them engaged in the training of future music therapists. So thank you for having us testify today, and thank you, hopefully, for your support of this bill.
Laura, if you are certified, does that carry with it either professional ethics or legal requirements to be a mandatory reporter if you are with someone, whether it's in a school, a private home, a clinic, or a hospital, and you recognize something that you believe needs to be reported either to a physician or law enforcement, would you then become part of that stream of reporting?
Yes. Yes, we are mandatory reporters. We are obligated. We have a very we have a scope of practice. We have a board of ethics at the National, the American Association, the American Music Therapy Association has an ethics. Ethics are part of our recertification process. We're required to undergo ethics training continually. And we're trained to recognize these kinds of situations. And in the clinical settings, students know through their supervisors the proper reporting channels.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Yeah. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking at a website for the American Music Therapy Association.
Yes.
Fascinating.
Yes.
And I used to play saxophone and clarinet. So,
once a musician.
So you're one of our peeps. Yes. That's great.
It doesn't always work.
And we really had a good talk last night in your office, Dr. Bates. I just can't believe that.
You didn't bring your music.
Oh, man.
Okay,
let's get right to it. All right. I do. Thank you. I didn't realize that it helped improve your communication skills. Mm-hmm. And I didn't also, which some of us I feel need this, enhance memory.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That was fascinating.
Mm-hmm. I have worked extensively and conducted research projects with people who have dementia, advanced dementia. And like Lilith said, music is a whole brain phenomenon. Mm-hmm. We're used to thinking right brain, left brain. Music affects the whole brain. And what we're finding in cases of memory, that deep-seated memories are still there and still accessible, but the brain deterioration, for example, with the process of dementia, deteriorates those pathways to memory. Music works to create new pathways, new neural connections that people access memories. I have worked with people who, one woman, very contracted, advanced dementia, had not spoken a word in about 2 years. And through music therapy, she started speaking again. She started singing. It was quite a shock. I'll tell you, the first time she did, I went up to her one morning. I'd been working with her, and I said, "Good morning." She looked up, she said, "Good morning to you." So music was her first way back to speaking. Mm-hmm. And through different music interventions, one of them, which was drumming, she actually began to regain some of this movement and began to be able to eat on her own for a while. So that's just one example of the power of music on a basic neurological, physiological level that brings people back some of their abilities, can leapfrog children into new abilities. People with post-traumatic stress disorder, the returning veterans right now, music therapy is a very strong initiative at the federal level, being supported by the VA as a way to help people manage and cope with their symptoms. And not only that, but to move through them and to find a healthier way of living.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for the question.
I'd like to add really quick, I have extensive experience working with children with autism and with those with brain injury. And what we find is music can help them remember sequences, so being able to shower independently, or brush their teeth, or you know, to remember sequences. Like, and you have used music to remember things as well. Like, how many of you are able to say the ABCs without elemental P being like one letter, right? And that's because you learned it in song. And so many things can be learned in song.
Mm-hmm. It's why...
I go there on that.
Representative Olson, I wonder if you're, in your opinion, whether there's room for a violin or a clarinet in a patrol car.
No.
We won't go there.
Ma'am.
Yes, Senator.
I really don't have a question. I have a statement. I've worked closely with the music therapist since I came into office and really strongly support this bill. And I would reinforce what Lilith just said. I will tell you that I still know the quadratic formula because I learned it to the tune of Yellow Submarine in eighth grade. And I know, scary, right? Thank you, Ms. Menapace. But I think, you know, I think just to put it on more on terms that those of us who haven't had a direct experience, think about when you walk through the rotunda and you hear a choir singing there and how it makes you stop and changes your day. That's a bunch of very well-trained but not professional musicians. And that makes all of us just in our day-to-day lives feel better. And I can pretty well guarantee you that if you have some kind of an MP3 player, you've got on a list of, a playlist that says feel-good songs or something to that effect, the ones that you play when you feel like you need a little bit of a boost or a pick-me-up. We know how powerful music can be in learning and why it's important. It helps you learn math better. Now imagine the power of music in the hands of a trained professional like a music therapist who can do all the things that Lilith and Laura have already explained to us and that we're going to, I'm sure, hear more about when I stop ranting. But I just think this is so critically important, and I think music therapy is such an important part of options to some of our more significantly troubled patients, whether it's the elderly or the kids with autism or for anybody who saw the King's Speech, you know, speech disorders.
That's right.
Music is a very powerful tool in all sorts of ways, and understanding the kind of training that these people get is really pretty powerful. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I'm just plugging the work that you do.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Representative Kenny Geyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to echo that. I am not a musician at all, but both this testimony and the one that you gave to the House Healthcare Committee has been incredibly compelling. And I see the value of this is in part ensuring quality oversight in the training and application of music therapy in our state. Mm-hmm. When someone calls himself a music therapist, I think that's a really important component. And then the ability to be reimbursed. And we did have, I know Holly Mercer came up and talked in front of the healthcare committee. I think you had some other people as well. So we asked a lot of very detailed questions at that point that really convinced me this was a very important step for our state. And as I understood it from that, I think it doesn't mandate that anyone use your services and pay for your services. It gives them ability to do that.
That's
provides
correct.
Access, yes.
Thank
yes.
you. For
yeah.
Thank just you. Want to make sure and that everyone here got to hear that as well.
And I do have clients currently who are reimbursed 100% for music therapy by their health insurance. Every single one of them, their health insurance is based in another state.
Uh-huh. Hmm.
none of my clients whose health insurance is based in the state of Oregon are able to be reimbursed for music therapy. So,
let's hear from the next person.
Thank you. Good morning, Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, and committee members. Thank you so much for this opportunity to be here. I got up this morning and had my big bowl of oatmeal, my cup of coffee, did my yoga, prepared the papers, and drove 2 hours from Sisters, Oregon to be here.
Wow.
So I know what it means to have commitment and passion about House Bill 2796, and we appreciate you all doing what you did to get here this morning. I would like to actually start with a little music myself, so it helps me ground. I use music regularly for myself. And I would actually like to take a risk and invite you to stand up.
We usually do this.
What if you're non-compliant?
You have freedom of choice. I'm just going to invite you to take a minute to stand up. I know you've been sitting this whole time. To just simply move your arms as I sing this song. And when I rise, let me rise like a bird joyfully. And when I fall, let me fall like a leaf without regret, joyfully. Thank you.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Sorry.
The music wrench.
Senator Winters. Sorry I'm grumpy late, but certain days I do water therapy and light therapy, and I have to do a disclaimer. I do come from musicians and music, so I think that music therapy, not only as a therapeutic mean, but also it's a language that some people don't really understand, whether that you can communicate with. So I really support what you're doing, and I happen to have a granddaughter who had three brain surgeries and had a brain concussion, and what we found, although part of the brain lost the math and science, the creative side of the brain now has brought in music, and she has actually produced her first single. So there is a lot of benefit, as I don't have to tell you, that's involved with music. So keep on doing what you're doing.
Thank you, Senator Winters.
Committee, I'd like to make sure we hear the rest of the testimony, conclude this bill. We still have one more bill to hear this morning. Mm-hmm.
Again, my name is Jody Windwalker. Thank you for taking that risk with me this morning. I feel much better. I am a licensed clinical social worker, board-certified music therapist, 33-year resident of Oregon. I'm the chair of the Oregon Government Relations Task Force, who's been working hard in support of this bill. I speak as a delegate of our National Association of Music Therapy. I speak in behalf of the clients that we serve, the administrators, the guardians, all the people that work in collaboration with us to help the citizens of Oregon have access to music therapy. Given the fact that Laura and Lilith did such a beautiful job of defining music therapy for you and educational aspects of it, I wanted to give you a quick overview of music therapy in the state of Oregon. We currently have 85 music therapists. We serve many, many clients in Marion County, Clackamas, Multnomah, Lane, Yamhill, Deschutes County, Hood River. That's a lot of area for 85 people. We serve many people that Laura just described. My agency, Earth Tones, has 10 music therapists employed. We have a full-time internship program, and we provide services to children and their families that have special needs. We serve people who have seniors with memory care, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and assisted living in private homes and residential care facilities. We serve adults with developmental disabilities as well in their group homes, private homes, also in their day programs and residential facilities, mental health, veterans, and some hospice care in the state of Oregon. very valuable services. When we talk about recognition, music therapy, I've watched for the last 33 years, music therapy become more and more recognized. And now that we have the internet, it really expands the knowledge that people have. And they call us and tell us what music therapy is and why they want it and how to get it. They are wondering, how do I get this in the state of Oregon? That's why we're here today. It's not because the music therapists are banging on the doors. It's because the citizens are banging on our doors.
That's right.
And we have a limited ability to point them in directions of funding. As a licensed clinical social worker, I can, as a music therapist, provide music therapy and build insurance companies. My employees, I cannot as an agency do that because my employees are not licensed in the state of Oregon. That would make a huge difference. One of the barriers that we encountered is in the brokerage system. For those of you who have been in Salem for a long time, know about Fairview Training Center, the large state institution that had 3,000 residents that was then downsized and closed in the late 80s, early 90s. And those individuals were placed in the community. While I was at Fairview working there, they had access to music therapy services through the funds that flow through that system. Once they were placed out in the community and the funds were flowed through the brokerage systems, they could no longer get music therapy because we're not listed as recognized as a fundable service through the brokerages. So that kind of left us in a conundrum, and that leaves many people knocking on the doors when they know there's funding available. However, it cannot be directed towards their treatment of choice. I did want to speak to Representative Nathanson's question about reporting and give you an example of when that happens. It's of great value to have many eyes out there in the community. And one of our music therapists called me and said, Jody, when I went to the door, the woman who I serve, who has late-stage Alzheimer's, answered the door. And isn't that kind of dangerous? This was at a group home and adult care home. And I said, yes, it is. Thank you for letting me know. Please write up a complete report of what happened, you know, when it happened, what you did, what the response. Then we sent that report to the case manager. The case manager then followed up with the homeowner and said, this isn't going to work, and we need to place her somewhere else where we know she's going to be safe and monitored. So these kinds of things happen a lot. I have many stories of that kind of thing in the care of the people that we serve. Because as Laura pointed out, we do work as active team members, and we understand we're providing 1, 2, maybe 3 hours of service, and the time that we're there is really of value, and it's important that we maintain communication. So that's why we're here today, is to communicate with you and make sure you have all the information that you need to make the choice that you have about House Bill 2796.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any last questions for this witness?
Just real quick, I'd ask that Holly Mercer to come up for a second. This is a Ways and Means Committee, and we actually look at the finances on things. That's what we're supposed to be doing.
You want a mic? Thank you.
Thank you.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Holly Mercer. I'm the executive director for the Health Licensing Office.
Holly, looking at the finances for this, the initial licensing, assuming 85, this licensing fee will cover 15, 17 nicely. 17, 19, they'll start running a deficit at $50 for a licensing fee. And within a few by them, they're going to be in trouble, and they'll have to raise your fees or come back here and ask for it again. I really don't want to do that. I'm kind of tired today. If the licensing, I mean, this is such an important thing for these people, small, what we're trying to do. If the renewal fee was $75, according to my math, you'd be there. And otherwise, they're going to be back here in about two bienniums, the way it looks here, asking for an increase in fees or retroactively agreeing to the fees. I just don't want to go through that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if LFO can do this for us, but I'd like to see if there's a consensus very quickly of making the relicensing fee $75 instead of $50. That would fix a problem for the foreseeable future.
Senator Bates, members of the committee, what we did in establishing these fees is ask the proponents from a national level where they stood in other states and $50 was arrived at. What this group has done, however, is we've set up a model at the Health Licensing Office that should be one of our most efficient models, which is a program rather than a board. And much of the authority rests with the office. This is a pretty streamlined, well-developed profession that has national associations, national certification. The office would be responsible to set up rules and to establish the professional standards, along with probably an advisory committee. But at least we've tried to streamline this. We would be, of course, any time that we can avoid the legislative session, we like that. So if this is the time to review those fees, we're more than willing. Or we can come back and report whatever this body would like us to do.
I'm not worried about anything you just said. I'm not even discussing that. Right. Like about in 2017-2019, you start running a deficit.
Yes.
Okay. And in 2020, you're probably going to come back here and ask for more money. Can't we just fix it now? Is there opposition of a fee of 75 versus 50? Is that a big deal? I guess there is. Run the bill the way it is. I'll see you in 2 years.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Winters.
Ms. Mercer offered to maybe come back with the report, and if it seems like they're running into some problems, maybe they don't have to come back, since she talked about the internal management system.
I understand. Okay.
That doesn't work.
We're
going to take a brief recess, very brief. Ability of this particular financial model. I would like Senator Bates and our legislative fiscal office analyst and Ms. Mercer and anyone else who needs to be involved to give this a little bit more thought over the next 24 hours and see if there's any issue that needs to be brought to the full Committee on Ways and Means. If we have a positive conclusion of a work session, which I do intend to call in just a moment, I don't think we're going to change anything on the fly at the desk here right now, but if we have a positive vote at the work session, let's continue the conversation for at least a few minutes and see if there's any other action to take.
Chair Nathanson, I just did receive word from the proponents that they would accept a $75 fee. So just to factor that in.
Well, let's just do it.
We'll do an amendment.
Okay.
We'll do an amendment.
Okay.
We'll take that under advisement.
Thank you very much.
You want to give us more money and we're saying maybe no thanks?
Yeah, right? Really nuts.
We have our
really
checkbook.
Nuts.
I have a question.
Yes.
And also this might, as you go under advisement about this, the, I'm also wondering if you have any projections of how it might grow once there's more of a reimbursement model and with Merrill Hurst, is that it, that is starting to offer a master's program. I'm assuming that the cost would be spread out over a greater number of people. So I don't know if you have any numbers or calculation, but that might help as the program grows.
I'll take just one quick response.
We need to move along.
I don't have specific numbers for you. I'm sure we could bring those back to you. But I can tell you that we have had music therapists move into the state of Oregon specifically because they want to live in this beautiful state and do whatever they can to make it work. I do know that Lilith Grand just hired a new employee who moved over from the East Coast, and she is here today. I can also tell you that I was recently contacted by a veteran from Pennsylvania who said that part of his treatment program is to seek out and travel to other areas of the United States to do special programs to help him with his post-traumatic stress disorder. So he is planning, I'll be contacting his case manager today, he's planning on coming to Oregon specifically to receive music therapy services and then return to Pennsylvania. So there's an outreach. We also have students who come from other countries, Japan, Taiwan, to study here at our universities. Some choose to stay, and some choose to return to Japan, which it brings Oregon onto the map. We have interns who come into the state of Oregon to train and then choose to stay as well. Thank you.
So this becomes now part of our export economy. Another additional point to enter into the testimony. At this time, I am closing the public hearing on House Bill 2796. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
This morning. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2796.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2796A to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Is there discussion on this motion? Are there objections? Motion passes. House Bill 2796 relating to music therapy now moves on to full ways and means.
Can I volunteer to carry it? Unless somebody else would like to?
We have a senator who would like to carry it at full.
Can I request that she sings it when she does it?
You can make that request.
Who's going to do that?
Certainly
I was walking through the rotunda. I heard some music that made me wonder.
Sorry.
So I closed the session.
How's that, Representative? Is that good?
What a morning.
Okay, we've completed our work on House Bill 2796. That work session is closed. I am opening a public hearing on House Bill 3230 relating to registered residential facilities. We have nothing to introduce in the way of LFO reports on this bill. I have one person signed up to testify, Kevin. And is anyone else here to testify on House Bill 3230? Okay, thank you.
Chair Nathanson, Chair Bates, thank you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 3230 today. My name is Kevin McChesney, and I'm here today representing the Oregon Residential Providers Association. I apologize in advance for providing sort of pedestrian testimony after the last two public hearings. This particular bill, I think, was not met with a lot of favor initially by providers, simply because I think that they were concerned about another duplicative level of oversight. And I want to commend Representative Gallegos and his staff for bringing all the parties together and really letting everybody fine-tune the language of the bill so that providers finally felt that it mitigated the potential for that duplicative oversight. I think on the other side of the equation, providers recognize very well that we have all been put in a position, either because of personal choice or because of lack of affordable housing, that we end up placing people in what I would call substandard housing situations. And we recognize that this is an opportunity to provide some regulatory oversight for those sorts of environments that are not currently being regulated at all. So we feel that that heavily outweighs the potential for duplicative oversight, and therefore support this bill.
Thank you. Are there questions? Yes.
If you could please summarize the bill again. I know I heard it in Health Committee, so I feel funny to be the one here asking about it, but could you please just describe exactly what it does?
Well, I don't know if I can describe it exactly, but what it does is it requires people that provide congregate living situations. So that's really providing meals and 24-hour housing to individuals with mental illness specifically. that it would require the owner and the operator of those homes to register with addictions and mental health or adults and persons with disability. So for the purposes of providing some minimum standards for operations of those facilities. And that currently is not happening.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you for being here this morning. I'm closing the public hearing on 3230. There's no other business before our committee this morning. Stay tuned. You know, we're on short notice now. Thank you for being here, committee. We're adjourned.
No, I can see that. You're standing.
We're adjourned.
No, I can see that.